Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, February 26th. A quick shout out to my oldest son, Ben, who turns 22 today. Happy birthday, Ben. You make me proud every day. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk healthcare economics. Specifically, we're going to talk about a new report that compared the hospital price controlling powers of competition, price transparency, and rate regulation, and a new study that connects payer reimbursement rates to provider consolidation. Teaching today's healthcare economics lesson are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Ben Berta. Is his nickname BB?
One of many.
Well, anyway, the snow is melting here like the Wicked Witch of the West, so I'm ecstatic.
Great. Julie, how about you?
My dream has finally come true, and we've nominated someone to head CMS. I'm very excited about that. And the sun is out in California, so it's been a good week.
All right. Needles are pointing in the right direction this morning. Great. Now, before we open our textbooks today, let's open our healthcare price transparency tools. Dave, have you ever used an app or a website to compare prices for medical care?
Oh, I do it all the time, more for research than actual care. My favorite is the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, which if you go on their website, they've got a picture of the human body with little dots. So if you tap on the knee, you'll get the 20 procedures, and then you click on a procedure and you get a price. They describe themselves as free market loving, price displaying, state of the art, AAA HC accredited, doctor owned, multi-specialty surgical facility in central Oklahoma. How's that for a mouthful?
Oh, my goodness.
No, that's great. It also sounds like the game of operation. I got to check out that illustration.
It looks like the game of operation.
Does it?
You're exactly right. All you need is tweezers.
Classic. Julie, how about you? Have you ever shopped for a care like you would for an item on Amazon?
Oh, yeah. I was on a high deductible plan for a while, so I got really interested in these. And of course, there was nowhere near enough to actually manage to that. But I used to use GoodRx to search for drugs and Amino to search for doctors and procedures. I was definitely into it for a while. Like Dave, I also used eHealth Insurance just for pure research when I was trying to kind of immerse myself in understanding the options for people who don't have employer-based insurance. So it's almost embarrassing. It is sort of fun, honestly.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I haven't used it yet for shopping for care, but I did recently spend a lot of time shopping for a new primary care physician because our health insurance changed. The lesson I learned is when an online provider directory says a doctor is in network and taking new patients, don't believe it. Call the doctor's office.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk healthcare economics. Dave, Rand released a report that compared competition, price transparency, and rate regulation in terms of their ability to bring down prices that hospitals charge to private health plans. Tell us what the report found and what the findings add to the debate over hospital prices.
Hospital spending constitutes between 35% of total healthcare expenditures. So in 2018, that translated into $1.2 trillion. That's trillion with a T. Using an economic term, hospital prices are insane. For example, California Pacific Medical Center, a Sutter Health facility outside San Francisco, has an almost 10 times differential in what it charges for routine C-sections, $6,241 for Medicaid patients, $60,584 for out-of-network commercially insured patients. Don't you love the specificity of those dollar amounts? With that context, let me briefly summarize the RAND report's findings and discuss its implications. RAND examined three ways to rein in hospital prices: rate regulation, competition, and transparency. In the current market, it's not even close. Rate regulation overwhelms competition and transparency in terms of reducing hospital expenditures. The report examines two types of rate regulation: price caps and rate setting. It's relatively straightforward to assess the impact of price caps. Capping prices at Medicare rates would reduce spending by $237 billion. Capping at 150% of Medicare rates would save $62 billion. Setting prices through a public option or for highly concentrated hospitals could also lead to dramatic decreases in hospital spending. Neither approach, however, would address the bugaboos of over and under treatment, which are rife within the system. The reason regulation is more effective than either transparency or competition is that hospitals have established monopoly pricing power for commercial payers in hundreds of healthcare's regional markets. Relying only on price controls, however, to rein in hospital spending concedes that the healthcare industrial complex is simply too strong for competitive market forces to achieve appropriate supply-demand equilibrium. I refuse to believe that's true. That's why we can't give up on price transparency, data interoperability, and other forms of regulatory interventions that level the competitive playing field, stimulate innovation, and encourage new market entrants. Top-down rate regulation is a blunt instrument that lowers costs but leaves the fragmented and overbuilt delivery system intact. Bottom-up, market-driven change has the power to transform care delivery in ways that promote better outcomes and greater value. Almost sounds like we need a customer revolution in healthcare, Dave.
I think I read about that. That's great, Dave. Thank you. Julie, what's your take on the RAND report? What's realistic? And more importantly, if I'm a patient, why should I care?
Well, you know, I agree with Dave on a lot, if not all of what he said. Price caps seem to make a lot of economic sense, but they can also be virtually impossible to pass politically, given the market-based implications that Dave talked about and have already seen associations come out in anger at the report. So while those kinds of caps can certainly keep providers from using their scale to negotiate prices, they can reduce hospital revenues in ways that, if not monitored closely, reduce access, can lead to hospital closure, certainly in communities for those that don't have a lot of options to begin with, and reduce care quality. One thing I noted was that Maryland is the one state in the country that has significant regulation of hospital prices. So I did a little sleuthing to figure out what's going on in Maryland. And I found three facts from about this time last year, January 2020, that made me think twice about what price capping does for consumers at the end of the day. So first of all, Maryland hospitals are ranked 46th in the U.S. in patient satisfaction, 46 out of 50. They're ranked 38% in patient safety, so that's also not so great. And Maryland is ranked 50th, that's 50th, in emergency room wait times. So I'm no statistician, but I would surmise that the stats in Maryland show that they don't quite have the focus on patient centricity and, you know, how to really improve experience and ensure the patients are safe the way the rest of the market has come around to in our good old competitive market. So as Dave said, I'm not so sure it's the right instrument.
Interesting. Yeah, no incentive to improve. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
I'm really glad Julie brought up Maryland. There are two issues in healthcare. There's cost per unit and number of units, and rate setting addresses the cost per unit problem. So in Maryland, whatever type of patient you are, the providers get paid the same amount of money. I have a friend who is very senior at Johns Hopkins who called me up one day and said, you know, we've got a problem with amputations at Hopkins. And I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, well, even though it's the same rate for amputations, we're doing a whole lot more amputations than we should because we get paid more for those. We aren't doing as much of the preventative care that could eliminate the need for the amputation in the first place. So that's a real problem. The other thing he told me was that they've got two switchboards at Hopkins. And if you're coming from out of state, you go to one switchboard where you're treated with dulcet tones and lavished with attention and so on, because out of state patients pay more money. But if you go into the other one, it's like going to the state-sponsored HMO, like Julie described. The only other thing I'd say is we're picking on hospitals here, but also payers can establish monopsony positions where they control so much of the market that they set prices. That's true here in Chicago. So monopoly, monopsony are bad any way you look at it. And the really scary thing is they tend to encourage one another. So where you've got a monopsony payer you're very often likely to have a monopoly provider.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about the connection between reimbursement rates and provider consolidation. Julie, a new study in health services research looked at Medicare site-based payments and hospital physician integration. What did the study find? And what does it say about aligned and misaligned financial incentives?
Well, let's first talk about why they did the study. And you know, as many of our healthcare nerds know, this trend of hospitals acquiring physician practices has been on the rise since 2007. And this is not our first rodeo, not our first wave of this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're up 20% or more across some specialties. And while this so-called vertical integration typically means higher prices, the evidence suggests that it doesn't necessarily mean better results. Researchers really wanted to look at the role that Medicare specifically is playing with its payment approach to driving vertical integration. So, you know, what they found is Medicare does, in fact, pay higher fees for a practice that integrates with a hospital. So Medicare would, on average, pay a physician about 80% more, which translates to about $100,000 per physician per year, if their practice were owned by a hospital versus a physician. And that physician is really not likely to see any of that higher payment for their services. So the hospital is really using this as a revenue stream for them. Gosh, Dave, we are picking on hospitals today. Now, this certainly varied by specialty, of course. It was more prevalent in primary care and some of the medical specialties, and certainly not surgical. But their conclusion was that Medicare payment is a factor that may be driving provider consolidation for certain specialties and hence higher costs. So they'd recommend tougher antitrust policies to address it. But of course, many have found that antitrust policies alone are not doing the trick. So not sure that's the solution. End of the day, Dave, CMS should be trying to cut costs, not increase them. So we do have a misalignment problem inspired by what we just talked about, scale-based negotiation advantages.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, if this study was on your syllabus, what would be your three takeaways for your students?
Well, the first is the data is old. It covers 2010 to 2016. It's just really frustrating the way the academic process works that they can't turn around these studies more quickly, but the whole way they do peer review and so on slows things down. The second finding is that in this particular case, it doesn't matter. As Julie said, we've been down this road before. Health economist Joe Flower has two iron rules for healthcare economics. The first is, people do what you pay them to do. And the second is that people do exactly what you pay them to do. So it's really not a surprise that organizations that can make more money by doing this type of vertical integration are choosing to pursue that option, you know, eyes wide open. Now, big picture, vertical integration supposedly is a good thing, like Julie suggested, because it enables an organization to enter into risk-based contracts more effectively. However, vertical integration by monopolist hospitals is dangerous because it provides ever greater pricing power that's often divorced from outcomes. Ipso facto, monopolies, monopsony, bad. Competition, level playing field, good. Let's do change and regulation that fosters the latter.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
You know, I would just completely agree with his monopoly monopsony and say that we don't necessarily want to not see integration, but it's the right kind of integration and the right kind of markets built around the patient and built around the consumer and getting more preventative that I think we hope to see.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. All right, let's talk about next week. Julie, what's the big healthcare news next week?
Well, I have a little personal PSA. I expressed my concerns last week about an uptick in depression, addiction, suicide. It was inspired in me mostly by the winter storm that was just piling on top of our COVID isolation issues. And unfortunately, right here in sunny Marin County this week, we saw a devastation in our own community. Marin County lost a 7th grader and an 8th grader to suicide. These are middle schoolers. So I'll just repeat that phrase. They are middle schoolers. I have a middle schooler. And it has just brought home to this highly protected community the tsunami of mental issues that are hitting our shores, their kids. And we need to get ahead of it. So I hope I see more about these issues in the news the next week. We need to be talking about it.
Agreed. That's sorry to hear. Dave, what's topping the healthcare news next week?
Well, first, Julie, that's just such a powerful insight. I hope you're right. In terms of what we're going to be talking about next week, all eyes are on the prize, right? The $1.9 trillion, that's with a T, stimulus package. And we just found out this morning the $15 minimum wage is coming out. So that shall probably make it easier to pass. But anyway, all eyes will be on that. The other thing is we now know the Biden healthcare team. Becerra is about to be confirmed as HHS secretary. Chiquita Brooks-LaSure going in as CMS administrator. Liz Fowler as head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, CMMI. Brooks-LaSure and Fowler are Obama veterans. And when you combine them with Becerra, it looks like the emphasis is going to be on overhauling Obamacare through the legislative process. I guess the question is, will this team continue the aggressive regulatory reform that was going on in the Trump administration? And my friend Zeke Emanuel assures me that payment reform is going to be top of the agenda. So let's hope he's right.
Got it, Dave.
Here, here.
Yep. Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. I know I'm much smarter now than I was 20 minutes ago. Thank you. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.